Tim, we were talking about the July 1952 overflights of Washington when a lot of American warplanes were sent up to pursue these UFOs, these objects. In your book, you mentioned that the pilots are, you know, there are some comments from pilots who are very upset that they weren't told the truth about what they were going up there to chase, right?
Yep.
Would you elaborate on what it was, what their concerns were? I mean, were they close enough to see these things to be concerned about what it was that they're going up against?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm quite sure that footage was taken with gun cameras at that time, but the whole thing had to be downplayed. There's absolutely no question about this, and so the pilots were very unhappy that a lot of their reports were being publicly discredited when they knew that all these things were going on. And we know that General Benjamin Chidlaw, who was former commanding general of what was then called Air Defense Command, said in 1953 that we take this stuff seriously when you consider we have lost many men and planes trying to intercept them. And this, of course, is one of the big secrets. And it was confirmed. I mentioned the statistics of that 1,773 unexplained accidents from 52 to 56. According to Leonard Stringfield, whom I knew, a great researcher and former Air Force intelligence officer, he was told by a reliable source at that time that the Air Force was losing about a plane a day to the UFOs, and that absolutely tallies with the Defense Department statistics, which published in my book for the first time, thanks to Richard Hall and his informant, Dr. Fontes in Brazil.
You know, I remember reading your book, Above Top Secret, long ago, and there was a photo of Winston Churchill in there and a quote from him as saying, you know, ordering the Ministry of Defense, I guess, hey, what's the deal on the UFOs? But until I read this new book, I didn't understand the context. His comments were inspired by the D.C. overflights, or was it something else?
Yes, it was by the D.C. overflights, absolutely. What does all this stuff about flying saucers mean? You know, what's the truth? Let me have a report at your convenience. That's off the top of my head. It was something like that, and they came back, Prime Minister, don't worry. Well, we've made an investigation in conjunction with the Americans. They were referring, of course, to the top-secret Flying Saucers Working Party, as it was called in Great Britain, wonderful title, which was established in 1950 for 1 year. They liaised with the Americans, and the object of the exercise, in my opinion, was the Americans were trying to get the Brits to discredit as many, especially the really good caliber sightings coming from pilots. I mean, we had sightings here in the very early 50s, prior to Washington, that there were sightings over Farnborough. Sort of major test pilots were seeing these things at Farnborough, the Royal Aircraft Establishment at Farnborough in Hampshire. And at low level, a craft came right over. I've described this in the book, came right over the airfield, seen by many officers, including these test pilots, on the ground. And this thing was at about, I don't know, no more than 1,000 feet, something like that. And it was metallic. It was making crackling sounds. There was a smell of ozone. There was a humming sound, and so on and so forth. And when the people from the Flying Saucers Working Party came to investigate, they took details very seriously and everything. And officially, the report was that the pilots had mistaken just conventional aircraft. So they were discredited. They were absolutely livid when they found out later on when the British government released some of these reports about the British flying saucers.
Wasn't there something involving Lord Mountbatten? He had an interest in the phenomena. Maybe something about something landing at his home.
Absolutely, yes. This was in the mid 1950s. I think it was around 1955, 56, when, according to one of his staff, a craft came down and a sort of section lowered from it, and a humanoid was seen. And this witness was actually sort of knocked off his bicycle in shock. It was in snow at that time, and he was encouraged to tell his boss, Lord Mountbatten, who came out to the site with him and saw the tracks of the bicycle where it had come down and everything. And Mountbatten believed that story. It's just one of many such stories, and that, I think certainly that inspired his interest, though I'm quite sure, according to my information, Mountbatten had a sighting in the Pacific Ocean during World War II.
I remember, and maybe it's from this book, maybe it's from an earlier book, that that there was some suspicion that Mountbatten may have been a source for Dorothy Kilgallen, the American journalist who was pursuing the UFO mystery.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I don't know for sure, but I think it's quite likely.
While we're on the subject of British UFO incidents and famous cases, the Rendlesham Forest case. I don't know if you heard earlier today in this program, I mentioned that Jacques Vallée had been in town here with the Remote Viewers Association, and I'd read something from Dr. Vallée about Rendlesham. He said that he was suspicious about that case because he believes that radar operators at this military base near where this incident had occurred had been told a couple of days beforehand, hey, keep an eye on the sea or what's going to come from the sea, his suspicion being that it may have been a manufactured incident. What's your take?
Well, I don't know is the answer to that. I mean, that may there may be some truth in that. What I can tell you is that about 10 days prior to the craft coming down, because Roswell, Rendlesham Forest case, which involved the twin U.S. Air Force bases of Bentwaters and Woodbridge, took place starting on sort of Christmas night, 25, 26, 27, 20. It was going on for several nights. And whatever it was, this thing came right down so low that the U.S. Air Force security policemen actually were able to touch it at one stage with their feet. They were following it around the forest. I mean, it's an incredible case. And Nick Pope, who headed the UFO department in the Ministry of Defense from 1991 to 1994, he's absolutely convinced that this was from somewhere else. And at one stage, unofficially, at one stage, this craft, or one of the craft, was beaming down lights at the nuclear weapons storage area at these U.S. Air Force bases. And there were more nuclear weapons stored in Suffolk, in Great Britain, than anywhere else in Europe at that time, in December of 1980. But I'd also like to add, George, that on the 15th of December, this is 10 days prior to Woodbridge Bentwaters, an identical craft was seen right over my area. I saw it myself, not for long, unfortunately, and it was one of those rare occasions when I didn't have a camera with me or a movie camera, but I did see this brilliant point of light in the sky, and I wondered what on earth it was. It didn't seem like an aircraft. It was a completely cloudless sky. But to cut a long story short, the next day I was told by a journalist that many people had seen for an hour and a quarter at least an object in the sky, and they were with binoculars. It was an elongated sort of triangular thing. Frequently, sections would come away from it and then regroup, and it would dart around the sky and then stay in one position for many minutes. And I'm sure that's the identical description of the craft that was seen in Bentwaters Woodbridge 10 days later. So I don't know about that story from Vallée, but I can add that part to it. And video film was actually taken of that craft as well. Unfortunately, video was in its infancy in 1980. So the zoom range was very restricted. So there's not, you can't really see that much apart from a brilliant point of light.